Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. Coming up, the latest on the reform and renewal consultations and details of a drive to encourage more minority ethnic Anglicans into ordained ministry in the Church of England. But first, it's been announced that the Church of England's investing bodies are to disinvest £12 million as part of a new climate change policy. It means that the Church Commissioners and the Church of England Pensions Board will divest from companies who generate more than 10% of their revenue from the worst polluting companies, those using thermal coal extraction or the production of oil from tar sands. Edward Mason, who's the head of responsible investment for the Church Commissioners, explains more.
We've divested from 13 companies. For the Church Commissioners, it's about £9 million of shareholdings. For the Pensions Board, around about £3 million of shareholdings. These are in companies that are in the highest carbon fossil fuels. So that's companies involved in thermal coal mining and oil sands extraction. We decided on the advice of the EIAG to make this move with them because these are the highest carbon fossil fuels that are making the greatest contribution to climate change. Because these are companies that specialise in these areas, we didn't think that we would be able to have productive engagement with them. And also, we don't feel that it's the right place for church investing bodies to have their money.
Richard Burridge, who's the deputy chair of the Ethical Investment Advisory Group and the lead on the EIAG's theological process, explains more about what they considered when coming up with the new climate change policy.
One of the important and distinctive things about the Church of England's approach to ethical investment is that we begin with our biblical and theological and Christian understandings of the issue under concern. So that with regard to the climate change, we were looking particularly at the creation stories in the Bible, the way in which human beings are placed in creation to care for the natural order, to act as its stewards, and in particular also our requirement through the scriptures, through theology, to care for the poor and the vulnerable and the weakest. And then we've moved from that into a very careful scientific understanding of what's happening in the world with talking to experts of our own Department of Climate Change here at King's College London and with Lord Stern at the London School of Economics and many others to be able to see what was the first step that we can do and what will be the following steps to try to actually fulfil our God-given requirement to care for the planet and to care for the poor and the vulnerable.
The primary focus of the new policy is for more engagement with companies, as Richard Burridge explains.
Alongside issues about disinvestment, the even more important in many ways is our work in engaging with companies. Disinvestment is a last resort. Most of the time we prefer to work with companies. We have them in, we discuss this. We've been involved in a shareholder resolution with BP. We've been voting against high salary packages of two-thirds of the companies we're invested in. So engagement is crucial, and the last resort is, well, if you won't engage and if you won't change, then we'll disinvest.
And as Edward Mason explains, the national investing bodies are committed to increasing their low-carbon investments.
Well, we've been increasing our investments in sustainable themes over recent years. So the Church Commissioners now have nearly 4% of their portfolio in forestry. So we're actually the largest private owner of forestry in the UK, which is quite a significant development in recent years. We've got investments in an investment trust that specialises in environmental solutions. We invest in green buildings in Southeast Asia. We're also pleased to be one of the backers of an investment management firm that was co-founded by Al Gore called Generation Investment Management, which integrates sustainability into all its investment decisions.
Consultations are taking place all over the country on the Reform and Renewal Programme, which was launched at February's General Synod. The series of reports and papers that have been produced look at areas such as resourcing ministerial education, developing discipleship and simplifying administration. I spoke to Christine Hardman, who's the prolocutor for the Canterbury province and a member of the Archbishop's Council. She's taking part in some of the group discussions. I asked her how they've been going.
It is inevitably varied. But overall, and I've been talking to other people, who other members of the council who've been going out, we've been really delighted by the level of engagement. There's been a really good level of energy and a desire to learn more about it, to become involved. The questions have been really good. So this isn't a one-way process. we are really learning a lot by this local engagement, which will be carried on and, you know, taken into the programme, which is not set in stone. So it's a two-way dialogue, which is excellent.
I was going to ask you, what role then of dioceses and parishes got to play in this process?
Yes. Well, of course, in the parishes, this is where the real work of spreading the gospel, sharing the gospel, caring for God's people, showing the love of God, this is where it happens. So they are, the local communities, the parishes are key in all this. How dioceses are also clearly key, because the central structures of the church can only enable the work that's going on locally. And dioceses will have different ways, I think, of transmitting this to the parishes. And that dioceses do have their own ways of and understand their own diocese. But the really key thing is that this is now going out to the dioceses and not staying in the central structures. So in different kinds of ways, there's a really great level of engagement. There is a real realisation in the Archbishop's Council and the Church Commissioners, and I think in the General Synod too, that if this doesn't support and encourage and enable mission in the parishes and in dioceses, this programme would be a waste of time, frankly.
What do you hope people will think about while they're discussing it?
I hope that they'll ask and challenge some really good questions. And stuff that's coming out at the moment, there's a lot of really good questions on how do we stop wasting so many gifts that so many people have in the church. So how do we enable, develop, encourage lay leadership and ministry? That's coming up in a lot of places, and that's clearly a serious issue for us to address. Other questions are things like, is the new structure of the mission money, which involves bidding for mission money, is that going to be an extra burden on parishes? You know, so we're going to be having to look at how we structure those bids. What are we asking people to do? Are we at risk of complicating things? So we're listening to all these questions quite carefully. And they will make a difference to the way the programme rolls out. It really is a two-way conversation. But I'm really encouraged that the Church Commissioners' distribution will, in the future, however we manage that, not be by a rather unhelpful formula, but be on a mission basis. That's what we'll be doing, resourcing mission locally.
Do you feel encouraged by what you've seen or disheartened?
I'm really encouraged. And I think it's very important that the church in the dioceses, in the parishes, at national level, has the courage to recognise and affirm all that's good that is happening. And there's lots of fabulous stuff happening, but also has the courage to look steadily at some of the challenges we're facing. And if we don't look at those challenges, if we bury our heads in the sand and don't respond, then there will be not an immediate crisis, but a slow, rather sad decline. And that the people, our children and grandchildren, deserve more of us than that. This is our generation. This is our responsibility. We are the people who happen to be here at this moment. And if we don't grasp this challenge, then we will fail those future generations. So we need to, no panic, but with enthusiasm and commitment and faith and hope, move forward to see how we can enable the future flourishing of the church and, of course, therefore, of the good news.
And you can find material relating to the Reform and Renewal programme on the front page of the Church of England website. The subject of admissions to Church of England schools has been in the news this week, with the announcement by a school in the Diocese of Southwark that it would no longer use church attendance as part of its admissions policy. Father Martin Hislop explained why they'd come to the decision.
Primarily, of course, it was the fact that we rarely applied distance as a criteria for anyone. So people living in council flats immediately next to my school rarely found a place at the school. In the case of my own school, and I can only speak for my school, the ethos of the school is totally anchored in the Christian faith as expressed through the Church of England. But the Church of England exists to be open and serve its community, and therefore the ethos of the school is that promotes inclusiveness. It seeks to promote respect and cultural diversity, and the faith element is there through our daily worship, which we have non-Christian families at St. Luke's who have never objected to the worship life of the school. So I see no contradiction at all. It's not there solely for the members of its congregation.
Nigel Genders, the Church of England's Chief Education Officer, explains the importance of admissions being set by the governing body for the local context.
It's a really good example of why it's so important that the whole question of admissions over subscription criteria is one which is dealt with at the local school level. The local governing body is best placed to know how best to use its criteria in a way which meets their aim to serve the whole community. So what we've been interested in for all the years of the church's involvement in education is serving that community and providing church schools for everybody. And this is an opportunity for the governing body to understand how best it can do that and use its oversubscription criteria in the right way.
So not every church school has admissions criteria that looks at faith?
No, so for our church schools, of which there are 4,700, 60% of them are voluntary control schools. That means that they follow the admissions criteria and the oversubscription criteria as laid down by the local authority. So they have no say in that whatsoever as a local governing body. And that's, as I say, for 60% of our schools. The 40% that are voluntary aided, many of them will be oversubscribed. And so they have to decide on what basis people express their preference and can get a place in their school when they're oversubscribed. And that tends to be a variety of distance from the school and commitment to the ethos of the school, which really can only be measured by church attendance.
So do we know how many church schools are looking at admissions solely based on faith criteria?
We've done some research across our own schools, and about 10% of places tend to be given on the basis of church attendance. Now, that is not a one-size-fits-all figure. It will vary from place to place, depending on the context of the school. Sometimes a school is placed in a particular part of the country to serve a very wide area and to provide a Christian education in that wider area, and they will have a different set of criteria for a school which is based particularly to serve its local catchment, its local community. So, for example, where we're opening new schools, you'll find that many of those new schools, which have been particularly set up to meet the demand of pupil places in a new development or in a particular area of disadvantage, then the school has been set up with completely open admissions criteria so that they just work on distance from the school. And that's something which I've explained in the chapter of that book I wrote for Civitas, which sets out how the church's involvement in education over those 200 years has enabled us to be able to work with this whole question about how best we serve that local community.
So it is about serving the whole community?
Absolutely. That's always been our objective as schools. We've set up 200 years ago to particularly serve the poor and the disadvantaged. And we still see ourselves as schools which are not faith schools serving Christians, but they're church schools for everybody.
The Reverend Nigel Genders, the Church of England's Chief Education Officer. More minority ethnic Anglicans are needed for ordained ministry in the Church of England, the Archbishop of York has said. In a foreword to a new booklet, Dr. John Sentamu said there has never been a better time for Christians from minority ethnic backgrounds to respond to God's call to ordained ministry in the Church of England. Dr. Elizabeth Henry is the Church of England's National Advisor on Minority Ethnic Anglican Concerns.
There's lots of efforts going into trying to make that change and trying to encourage others to that, you know, the church is a place for all. As you know, the booklet is called Everyday People, and it is about everyday people, because people that come into ordained ministry are just that. They come from all walks of life, from all backgrounds. They have all sorts of histories, and that's the diversity of our church. Why? Because we minister to people from all over the world and from every walk of life as well.
What is the Church of England trying to do then on a broader level to get more people in from minority ethnic backgrounds?
We do have a strategy group, and it's called the Vocation Strategy Group. And that group, our sole efforts are around increasing minority ethnic vocations to the church. So one of the other things that we do, we have a minority ethnic vocations conference. And the reason that we have decided to specifically focus on what it's one conference a year, specifically focus on minority ethnic people to attend that conference, is there are other vocations conference throughout the year that are offered by through the ministry division. However, one of the things that we do find is that minority ethnic people are not coming forward for various reasons, we believe, to those conferences. So we have a conference in which our sole focus is around encouraging our diocese to identify, support, nominate and send minority ethnic people to the vocations conference. Some of the feedback we've received from those conferences has been very, very positive. People saying that it has been wonderful affirmation for them to learn about the vocations process, learn more about the church and what their role could be in our church with people of like minds and people who are like themselves. And that has been a very reassuring element of those conferences.
Is the booklet partly to give dioceses tools as well, so Absolutely. They know what to do?
Absolutely. And actually, one of the things that has happened, which we're thrilled about, we have had a huge feedback. There has been great demand for more of the book, so it really has hit the ground running. We have had feedback already of dioceses telling us that they're using the book in all sorts of ways. They've distributed the book out to their churches. They've used the book, or they've used the booklet already in conferences. They use the booklet when they're out speaking. So the booklet's getting a really high profile across the church, and we're very, very pleased about that, because the aim was to give dioceses and diocesan persons who address issues of both underrepresentation and encouraging people to vocation, supporting people through vocation, a tool that could help them in approaching underrepresented groups, of which minority ethnic people are a significant underrepresented group.
How do you capitalise on that momentum now?
We're continuing with our work. Of course, one of the things that we, as I said already, that we are doing is the conference, and there will be another minority ethnic conference later this year. It's scheduled for September of this year, so we already have that. We'll be taking nominations for that. We are asking the diocese, what do you need? What else can we do? How can we support you? How can we help you in your efforts? We are providing advice to dioceses of how to encourage underrepresented groups, some of the things that they can do, such as having a conference within their own diocese as opposed to a national one. Directly approaching people. We hear from dioceses also, can you help us in how we actually approach people? How do we do that? So there's lots of advice and lots of support that we're giving to dioceses to help them in their individual efforts.
Dr. Elizabeth Henry, and you can find details of the booklet in a blog written by the Reverend Dr. Sharon Prentice, which is on the front page of the Church of England website. That's it for this week. Don't forget, you can get every week's podcast by subscribing on the iTunes store, and each week's new programme will be automatically downloaded. I'm Gillian Moody. Thanks for listening.